What a way to...
I guess I'm on, right? What a way to open a conference. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm doing here. Because I've been married 20 years. I can't play an instrument and I don't ride a motorcycle. So I don't... They may ask for their tickets back after I'm done. I don't... But we are glad to be here, though. We are glad to be here. We are glad that the Lord worked it out to make it available to us to be here this week. And just a little bit of time we've been here this afternoon, thank you for your hospitality. Thank you. And the accommodations that you have provided for us are wonderful. And we are looking forward to a great week with you. We really are. I'm on a time constraint here, so turn to Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter, it's hard to get up behind a live mic and not talk about Canada, but I'll get to do that later. So turn to Luke chapter 15 tonight. We're going to look at a parable. And before we look at the parable, parables in the Bible are not there just because the Lord thought it would be great to throw a story in. A parable is there for a reason. The Lord did not speak in parables just because He thought it would be a neat thing to do. The Lord took parables and took an opportunity to teach a lesson. Whether that be to a group of people that He was speaking to, or whether that be to a small group of His disciples, and use it as a teaching time with them. And we're going to look at this parable in Luke chapter 15, and we're going to figure out, why did the Lord put this parable in His Word for us to be able to read it in 2013? See, because when we look at the Bible, we have to look at it and interpret it. Who was it written to, and what did it mean to the people that it was written to? And if it meant that to them, what does that mean to us today? So we're going to figure out this parable in Luke chapter 15. Why is it there? And what can we learn from it in 2013? And especially, what can we learn from it in a missions conference? In a missions conference. Well, in order to figure out why this parable is here, let's look at the context of the chapter. Look at verse 1 in Luke chapter 15. Then drew near unto Him all the publicans and sinners for to hear Him, and the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. Verse 3, and He spake this parable unto them. Why did Jesus speak this parable? Jesus spoke this parable that we're going to look at tonight. He spoke it in response to the Pharisees and to the scribes. And what did the Pharisees and the scribes say? They said this, This man receiveth sinners, and he eateth with them. Here's our context. Jesus was there talking to a large crowd. And in verse 1 it tells us, that publicans and sinners drew near for to hear what He was teaching. And in that day and age, in that culture, there was no one lower than a publican. That was the bottom of the social status in that day. And these Pharisees and scribes watched this man who claimed to be the Son of God. They watched this man eat and fellowship with publicans and people that they would have classified in their religious structure as sinners. And this very man, this very God, fellowshipped with them and ate with them. And they looked upon it and said, How can this be? What is He doing this for? Well, guess what? The Lord gave us the parable in Luke chapter 15 to tell us exactly why He was doing it. See, because it's been said this, the evidence that we know God is not our ability to define the divine attributes. See, the fact that we can list off a list of God's attributes does not prove that we know God. That simply means that we can memorize a list of things about God. And we may have learned them in Sunday school as a child, or we may have learned them in a Bible study or somewhere. Just the fact that we can list off all these things about God does not know does not mean that we know that God. See, right knowledge of God is present when we imitate our Father. When we imitate our Heavenly Father. That's when people know that we truly know our God. When we imitate Him. See, and that's what this parable is all about. This parable in Luke chapter 15 is going to give us a description of our Heavenly Father. We're going to see an earthly father that had two sons and how he treated both of those sons. And it's exactly how our Heavenly Father treats us. So what does that mean to us in 2013? It means this. We ought to view sinners, if we're talking about the mission field tonight, about taking the gospel around the world, we ought to view sinners the way our Heavenly Father views sinners. We have to have the right perspective. And we're going to see, we already know from verses 1 and 2, what the Pharisees and scribes thought about these publicans and sinners. They thought they fellowshiped with. They thought be eaten with, spent time with. But we're going to find out here, that's not what our Heavenly Father says. Let's go to Luke chapter 15. And for time, I'm not going to read through the whole parable, but starting in verse 11. And he said, a certain man had two sons. And we know this parable. We know these two sons. A younger son, an older son. The younger son comes to his father and says, Dad, would you give me the inheritance now? Can I have my money now? I want to go my way. I want to live my life. I want to do what I want to do. What did that young son do to that dad? Well, in that culture, that son might as well have walked up to his dad and said, Dad, wouldn't you already die? Come on, just die. Would you just die? So I can get my part of the inheritance. Because I want to leave this one horse town and I want to go live my life. Now, most dads in that day and age, what would they have done at that point? They would have disowned that son. That dad would have instructed that son in the fact that you don't disgrace me. You don't come to me and wish me dead. You'll get my inheritance when I die, and not a day before. I'm going to disown you. Well, this dad gave him the portion of his goods. And we all know what the younger son did with it. He went to a far country and he wasted his living on a riotous life. And we know what he did. Go to verse 16. And here's where the younger son ended up. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. Here's the first glimpse we get of our Heavenly Father. You want to know what that is? Here's what it is. If the Pharisees and the scribes were writing this parable would have ended in verse 16. Because the Pharisees and the scribes would have said what? Just what we say in our day and age. See, he made his bed, now he can lie in it. Could have told you that's what was going to happen to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes would have ended it right there. But you know what? We have a loving Heavenly Father who continued this parable on in verses 17 and continuing. And what does this Father do? Verse 17, we see the young man starting the conviction that's eventually going to lead to his salvation. And what does he say here in verse 17? And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee. and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. The younger son's on the right track, but he's not quite there. He's not quite there. For if he were all the way there, he would have known the reception he was going to receive when he got home. But what does he say? He says, oh, I don't want to be your son anymore. Just make me as a hired servant. Just let me get back in as a hired servant and I'll be fine. So he goes home. And what happens? Verse 20. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion. Stop right there. Culturally, what did we say this dad would have done? Disowned him. But this dad didn't disown him, did he? See, the Jews have a ceremony they call the Kazaza ceremony. And when a family member disgraces the family, they take a pot of grain or a pot of oil and they'll take that to the village gate and they'll break it open on the ground to signify to that village or to that town, that person is no longer a part of our family. We have disowned them. We have spilt the grain. We have spilt the oil. I must have missed it. Which verse did the dad do that in? Which verse? He didn't do that, did he? He didn't do that. He broke culture. He broke the culture of the Pharisees and the scribes that said, you shouldn't even eat with these people. But this dad did not do that ceremony. He did the exact opposite. What did he do? Verse 20. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him. What does that imply? What was his dad doing? That's right. His dad was watching for him. Why? His dad knew he'd return. His dad knew he would be back. And it says, and he had compassion. And look at this. Look at this. You want a picture of our Heavenly Father? You want a picture of the cross? You want a picture of what Jesus Christ did for us on the cross? Look at verse 20. And had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. This dad broke culture again. Distinguished men of his age and of his stature did not run in public. But he had a wayward son that he wanted to meet. And he gave that all up. Just like our Heavenly Father offered his son. And his son gave up the splendor of glory to come to a cross and die as a man to cover my sin and your sin. What a picture. What a picture. And we wonder, why did Jesus eat and fellowship with the publicans and with the sinners? Because that's who he came to save. That's who he came to save. He didn't come to call the Pharisees who thought they had already attained religiously. He came to the lowly, to the broken. And that's what we have in 2013. We talk about moving from this country to a different country because things are so bad. Our pastor has a phrase that he uses. And when you know it, as soon as I said that, my mind went totally blank. No. He said, we live in a casualty-making world. Our world creates casualties. Just like Jesus' world did back then. And the Pharisees and the scribes looked over all of those casualties because they didn't fit in their religious box. They couldn't attain to what the Pharisees and the scribes had set up as what they thought was the perfect Christian. But this dad broke that culture. And he didn't perform the breaking of the pot. And he watched for his son. And he ran and met his son. And what did he do? Did he bring him back in as the hired servant? No. He brought him back in as a son. Just like we are adopted as sons into God's family. Not as hired servants, but as sons. To them gave he power to become the sons of God. Not hired servants. But he had two sons. So we know what happened with the younger one. And we know how he treated the younger one. And what he did. And what he gave up to treat the younger one. Now what happened to the older one? Well, the younger one comes home. And what does he say? Verse 23. And bring hither the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and was alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Verse 25, now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And what did he do? He said to one of the servants, what's going on here? There must be some mistake. I didn't get called to the party. What's going on? Well, let me tell you what's going on. Your brother. You remember your brother, right? Oh, he remembered him, all right. Oh, yeah. He remembered him. He remembered him. Come on in. Your dad killed the fatted calf. There's a party. Your brother was lost. He's found. Come on in. We're throwing him a party. Let's be merry. And the brother said, oh, yeah, just a minute. I'm going to wash up. I'll be right there. Is that what he did? No. He was like that little dirty snot-nosed, plug-your-ears kids, teenagers. And what did he do? He stood out on the front steps of the house and he kicked him. I am not going in there. You know who's in there? He was so mad at his brother in verses 27 down through the end of the chapter. He can't even mention his name. He just says, you know, that brother of mine. I am not going into that party. I paid my dues. I did everything Dad asked of me. Who does the older brother represent in this parable? The Pharisees and the scribes. They dotted their I's and they crossed their T's and they had it all figured out and they were set. And this older brother, I paid my dues. Anything you ever asked, I did. When's the last time you killed a fatted calf for me and my friends? I'm not going in there. So what did Dad do? Here's another beautiful picture of our Heavenly Father. Verse 28. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. Do you know our Heavenly Father is consistent? He treated you just like He treated me. Have you heard the phrase, the ground of the cross is level? Not any one of us is any better when we come to the cross. There is no reason that Jesus chose me over you because I was no better than you. We were both dirty, rotten sinners and had no hope of reconciling with God. No hope. But He treated us the same. And this dad did the same exact thing. He gave up culture. He gave up society that said a host does not leave his party. He is there to attend to his guests, to make sure their every need is met. And what did this dad do? He got up, he left his own party, and he went outside to that dirty, snot-nosed teenager that was having a temper tantrum on the front porch. And he entreated him. He talked with him. Just like he did the younger one that took his money and wasted it. And what? What does he say to him? Look at verse 32. Actually, go to verse 31. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. What is he telling the son there? Look, son, you've been with me this whole time. You never left my side. You've worked with me. What is the dad really saying to the son? Son, you should have known me. You were there. We worked side by side in the field. I taught you the family business. Whatever it was, you should have known me, son. You've been with me the whole time. Everything I have is yours. But did the older son really know his dad? No. He didn't, did he? See, because if he had known his dad, he wouldn't have had that temper tantrum when he found out that his younger brother was home. How do we know that? Look at the last verse of the chapter. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad. For this thy brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found. What did dad tell him? I had no other choice, son. It was meet. It was necessary that I throw a party when your brother came home. It was in my very nature, my very character, to be the loving father that I am. Do you know that our Heavenly Father is the same exact way? It's his very character. It's who God is. See, God doesn't have the characteristic like we talk about characteristics, like we have. So we don't say about God, well, you know, God is loving. No, God's not loving. God is love. If you want to know what love is, know what God is. Because God is love. That's not just a simple attribute that he has or a character about him. It's his very being. It's who he is. Just like holy, just. We speak of them as character so we can get a grasp in our human mind of what that's like. But it's his very nature, his very being. So when this dad says it was meet, it was absolutely necessary that we should make merry and be glad, he's saying, I had no other choice. Because that's who I am. That's what I am. And that's our Heavenly Father. He's consistent. And he treats us all the same. Whether we're a publican and a sinner or a Pharisee and a scribe, he treats us the same. He loves us. And he forgives us. And he doesn't disown us. He doesn't go to the village gate and break the pot on us. We have the opportunity to come home. To come to him. So what does that mean to us in 2013 at a missions conference? How do we view sinners? We all know sinners, right? Right? See, another great phrase is taking the gospel to the marketplace. What is your marketplace? Where do you work? Who are your neighbors? Each and every one of us has our own marketplace. And how do we view those people in our marketplace? Are we a Pharisee and a scribe, and do we look at them and go, I can't get too close to them? You know what my brothers and sisters at Volusia County Baptist Church would say if they saw me mingling with those people? I didn't say you had to join them and do what they do. But how do we view them? Do we view them as lost souls? Or do we view them like the scribes and the Pharisees? And say, well, they're beyond hope. No helping them. See, that's what we like to do, isn't it? We like to give a 7-step process. Clean yourself up, come to church, and then you get saved. Right? Isn't that what we think? Right? We go up to the guy on the street corner or wherever, or we're on door to door, and, brother, you got to quit smoking and quit drinking. No, they got to get saved. Right? And then what happens when they get saved? They stop smoking and they stop drinking. See, we want to reverse it. Why do we want to reverse it? Because it's uncomfortable, isn't it? It's uncomfortable. Ministry can be messy. Can it, brother? You've been in it. It does. It can be messy. But how do we view those people? Do we view them as lost souls? And that's why this parable is in the Bible. So we can see how our Heavenly Father views lost souls. And we'll end with this. What we know of God is seen in how we view ourselves as lost and how we deal with others as lost. God's heart aches over those who are lost. God's heart rejoices over those who are found. How well we know Him is revealed by whether or not we ache and rejoice as He does. Do we see them as God sees them? As lost eternal souls. And not as messy. Ooh, let somebody else deal with that. But we need to see them as lost souls. Because that's how our Heavenly Father views them.